You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations all across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio on every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide via Free Speech TV. More people watch or listen to the Tom Hartman Program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. Welcome to our program. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. And a special number for our conservative callers, 866-745-CONS, should you be interested. And the Occupy movements have gone international. And I really believe that this is not just an extension of the old, you know, what was going on in Europe, but this is like, it's kind of bounced, it's bouncing back and forth, and now it's becoming like this resonant frequency around the planet. So throughout the day today, in our third hour, Tom Hayden's going to drop by, who has, actually, we're going to be talking with him about some scuttlebutt that he's writing about, that Obama's actually going to end the war in Iraq. But he also has, you know, his share of experience as one of the founders of SDS with Occupy movements. In our second hour, Joshua Connert is going to be here with Occupy Chicago. And in this hour, we're going to be talking with Sarah Jaffe in just a moment about what happened in New York. Jay Meyerson is going to be with us with a report from Tacoma and Seattle. And Colorado State Representative Wes McKinley is going to be with us about what's going on in Denver. So, and if you happen to have been at an event this weekend, or if you happen to be at one and you've got updates, feel free to give us a shout. And frankly, you can use either line. Even if you're not a con, you can call if the regular 866-987-THOM line is busy, as it often is. That we've got six lines dedicated to each of these. They get jammed. You can call our 866-745-CONS line, even if you're not a conservative, and try that out. Right now, Sarah Jaffe on the line with us. Sarah is an associate editor at Alternet, alternet.org, and wrote a great piece, From Party to Standoff at Times Square, Occupy Wall Street Spreads. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what happened in New York over the weekend.
Well, a lot of things happened in New York over the weekend. Did you cover Friday already?
No,
I haven't. I think Friday needs to be reemphasized a little bit.
I'm throwing the whole thing to you.
Okay, so Friday morning, what happened was that Mayor Bloomberg and the public-private partnership that runs the park where the original occupation is camped out, they received notice from the people who run this park, which includes Mayor Bloomberg's girlfriend, Diana Taylor, that they were going to have to move out of the park because it needed to be cleaned. Now, what happened on Thursday afternoon was they held an emergency general assembly, and they voted to clean the park and not give it up, and they called for reinforcements all over the city. So I was down in Liberty Plaza at 5 a.m. on Friday morning as thousands of people filled the park, and the unions came in, everybody, community groups.
We did cover that part on Friday,
and
we had a live report from the park on Friday.
So. Right. Okay, good. So, yeah, so Friday was still the high point. But Saturday was the globally coordinated day of action. That was the October 15th or 15-0 around the world. And it started off with a march from Liberty Plaza to Chase Bank, where people, the labor working group had coordinated a group of people who were going to withdraw their money from Chase, close their accounts, and explain to Chase why they were closing their accounts. From there, some of them went to Citibank, where 24 people were actually arrested for daring to try to withdraw their money from the bank.
Now, seriously, they just, you know, we're talking about people who just, as customers, walked in with Chase Bank, here's my Chase Bank credit card, here's proof that I have a Chase Bank account, I want to close it, and they got arrested for that?
Yeah, well, there is a march going, like I said, there was a march that started at Liberty Plaza that was going to all these banks, and apparently the bank employees thought they were too rowdy, and they locked the doors and called the police. There's actually a video of this online.
Right.
24 people were arrested for criminal trespass. because apparently trying to get your money back from Citibank is trespassing.
24 Citibank customers were arrested for criminal trespass at Citibank.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yep. So, but from there, the march kept going, and they went to Washington Square Park, and then from Washington Square Park to Times Square, where it's really hard to get an accurate crowd estimate because there's, you know, there's endless tourists coming in and out of Times Square, mingling with the crowds. But some New York Magazine reported around 10,000 people in Times Square, penned off in the usual little barricaded demonstration areas that they've been using on us for a long time. And, yeah, everything was going great. There was a band. People were having fun. And still not sure exactly what people were doing that got several people arrested and resulted in a big standoff with the police for a couple hours.
Now, is this – I saw the video of a young man saying – I need to walk from here over to that block. Will you arrest me if I do? The officer said no. He starts walking. He suddenly gets arrested. The crowd starts screaming, shame, shame. That was Times Square?
Yes, I believe that was in Times Square. I didn't see that. I was stuck on the north side of most of what happened. Most of the police walked in right in front of me and then headed south.
Well, I'm curious if that was one of the early, like, maybe inciting incidents, not like he was an inciter, but you know what I mean?
I mean,
you know, kind of. The beginning
that doesn't
of the,
seem like much of an inciting incident to me.
Well, I meant in the dramatic sense, you know, in a
yeah,
movie, in
no,
the arc
exactly.
of a movie, the first thing that starts the action is called the inciting incident, and then you get the crisis
exactly.
and the climax.
No,
and the
resolution. But I'm still wondering what exactly kicked it off. I mean, Times Square is regularly home to a million people that gather there every year for New Year's, and I'm sure a lot of them are drunk.
And there's
why
always
is it that we suddenly couldn't handle this.
You know, and there's three card Monte artists, and there's people selling $10 Rolex watches, and there's like it's always been Disney World, you know. Although Disney does have now a rather strong presence there.
Well, Disney World is not exactly what I call it, but there's definitely something going on there.
So the status of things now.
If we've
covered the arc sufficiently up to.
Well, actually, after that, everybody, people reconvened in Washington Square Park again and were there until about 1 in the morning when they were chased out by the police. So there were 3,000 people
that
gathered
Saturday.
Around 10 p.m. So it was quite a day on Saturday in New York.
Right. Okay. And then Sunday?
And Sunday, you know, the usual day at Liberty Plaza. There were a few hundred people. And there's the core group that holds down the park no matter how big the marches get and how big the rallies get.
Right.
But there's, you know, for it's now there are too many people interested in this for them to have big rallies in that plaza. So they have to move around the city.
So, and your billionaire mayor's wife, or girlfriend rather.
Girlfriend, yes.
Is he married?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not that kind of girlfriend.
Yeah,
it's just the out and accepted, and his longtime partner.
Right.
She sits on the board of Brookfield, the company that
she
runs the park.
She has not decided to throw you out of the park, that she's part of the board of directors of the company.
Yeah.
Yet. Yeah.
Well, I mean, after what happened on Friday, I don't know if they can now. That's the speculation is that was the last chance that they possibly had.
So, Sarah, we have 30 seconds left. Where do you see things going, and what can people do to participate or help?
I mean, the biggest thing you can do is just show up at your neighborhood occupation, see what people need, ask around.
All around the
country. If you live somewhere cold like New York, bring coats, bring blankets, because it's about to start getting cold out.
Yeah, and OccupyWallStreet.com. Was it org? I think it's the site.
There are several different sites and several different places you can go.
Sure.
The Twitter accounts, check the hashtag, hashtag OWS on Twitter.
Okay, great. Sarah Jaffe, thank you so much, Sarah.
Sure.
For the associate editor at alternate.org. You can read her writing and reporting there. And we will keep you up to date on what's going on. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And we've got a report coming in from Occupy DC as well. Our associate producer Jacob Dean was there. We'll be right back.
What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street. Singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop
Talk media for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you, and J.A. Meyerson, who's been our reporter on the ground in so many places in these Occupy movements, contributor over at alternet.org, and, of course, writing, blogging, commentary, whatever, at jameyerson.com. And, J.A., welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Tom.
So you are off to the West Coast. You've been in Tacoma and Seattle. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm here in Tacoma, Washington right now, and I was at Occupy Seattle on Saturday for the National Day of Action when everything was going wild in Times Square and all across the world, and I'm just thrilled to see how far the reach of this thing is.
Yeah. So, first of all, anything out of the ordinary or, for that matter, I guess the ordinary is out of the ordinary these days. What's going on in Tacoma and Seattle? Give us a snapshot.
Well, it sure is out of the ordinary. I mean, I went to Seattle to sort of, the angle that I was hoping to find was there's a certain narrative that the WTO protest and the sort of globalization protest in the late 90s were interrupted by 9/11. And essentially the last decade has constituted an interruption in this movement, and Occupy Wall Street and the sort of Occupy Together movement is a resumption of that. So I went by to sort of see, if people at Occupy Seattle had been around 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. By and large, they hadn't. This is a very young group. It's very much in the mold of Occupy Wall Street. There were some labor folks there who came out in the late 90s to support the WTO protests. But by and large, it's its own thing. The sort of radical anarchist tradition is definitely alive and well there in Seattle. Every bookstore and coffee shop I went into, people were talking about Occupy Wall Street and their vision for it and their views on its official nonviolence. Some people are critical of that in Seattle, which we sort of know the history there.
Yeah. May I interject here, just for some clarification? You mentioned the radical anarchist tradition. And I think, and correct me if your understanding of this is different, but I think that most people who don't understand the history of various political movements think that anarchist means no government, general craziness, people who throw firebombs or Molotov cocktails in Milan, kind of thing. And in fact, the historic political anarchists, their fundamental belief was that no one person is greater than any other person, and that everybody should have a say. It's even more pure than classic Greek pure democracy, in that the Greeks only had a 6,000 person limit for the demos, for a quorum, and that's basically what these assemblies are. Is they're modeled in classic anarchist and not the negative context, but the traditional anarchist.
Yeah. The General Assembly is very much an anarchist-inspired body and all of its procedures. Occupy Wall Street was, in fact, among the original organizers, there were quite a number of anarchists and in fact, quite well-respected. When David Graeber, the economist who, makes the rounds on MSNBC and has a wonderful book on the debt and stuff like that, he's an anarchist and a very eloquent one, and he was an early supporter of Occupy Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But the sort of Seattle WTO 1999 black bloc kind of the sort of vandalism and lightweight violence thing, there is a sort of tradition of that's still alive and well here. But for the most part, everyone seems to be pretty much on board with the nonviolence of
well, and in fact,
understanding that's the way that a movement wins in America.
Yeah, and in fact, the vandalism, in quotes, of the WTO movements, apparently nobody ever threw a Molotov cocktail, and much of it was just wildly exaggerated or even just made up by the media.
Yeah.
So, yes, anyway.
I think that's probably right. But I'm in Tacoma now, and Occupy Tacoma just got off the ground the other day. It's very small now, but it's very committed, and, it's inspiring to see someplace like Tacoma, where most Americans haven't heard of Tacoma, Washington, and yet there's an occupation here, and that's true all over the place. I visited the University of Puget Sound, which is no Berkeley in the 60s, but every, you know, in the dining hall, everywhere you went, people were talking about Occupy Seattle, Occupy Tacoma, Occupy this. There was a meeting of maybe 200 people to occupy Puget Sound and join up with Occupy Tacoma. So it's definitely reaching very, very far in the United States, and as we saw on Saturday, all over the world.
Right. And ultimately, it's going to be Occupy America. You know, it's going to be, we need fundamental change. The you know, Barack Obama campaigned in 2008 on fundamentally changing America. And that's right. And we would like to see that. You know,
and so much of the energy that went into that campaign was immediately became disillusionment over the next 3 years when none of the sort of hope and change that was promised came about. And I think that a lot of that energy has now transitioned into this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say none.
My generation is figuring out that a social movement isn't to elect a candidate; it's to advance an agenda.
Yep.
And that's what this is about.
And then the candidates will figure that out and follow the agenda. By the way, you know, but politicians, you know, try to pretend that they're leading the parade. But the fact of the matter is, they wait for the parade to get big enough, and then they jump out in front of it, hoist a flag, and say, "This is my parade."
Right. It's also true that it's likely to go beyond just Occupy America to occupy the planet, because it's sort of not useful to think of the American economy as a sovereign thing without considering China and Saudi Arabia and the sort of whole global, you know, geopolitical and economic.
Yeah. Europe, South America, the whole thing.
Occupy the world is where this is.
Yeah, a lot of people are questioning capitalism, at least as it stands right now. J.A. Meyerson, jamyerson.com. You can read his work. Thank you, J.A.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with some more reports from people on the ground. Occupy Phoenix. Occupy Portland. Fascinating. The place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person, and we dare to say no, hell no. In fact, no way. Oh, that's our full Monty alert. Oh, okay, X-rated skydiving. The Federal Aviation Administration is investigating a skydiving incident in California after a video surfaced of two people engaging in a sex act while jumping out of a plane together. Turns out that any activity that could be a distraction to a pilot violates federal regulations. And based on the video and what was going on right next to the pilot, it's hard to believe he wasn't distracted. The skydiving instructor at the company Skydive Taft, who moonlights as a porn star, has been fired as a result of the incident. And the receptionist, who is the partner in the high-flying sex act, is awaiting disciplinary action. And you thought a parachute was the only protection needed while skydiving. 866-97-TOM, our telephone number, and Rob in Phoenix listening on KPHX. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
So the Occupy Phoenix that Felix Chavez Park downtown went very well. It was very organized, very very peaceful. There was a few people that were trying to antagonize people, but all in all, it went very well. And later, about 5 p.m., we marched down to Margaret T. Hans Park.
Was this Saturday or Sunday?
This was Saturday.
Okay.
The 15th. We marched down to the park where they were going to try to occupy that park all night long. Although there was a curfew of 10:30, they had they selected some people to try to negotiate with the mayor of Phoenix, and they sent them down to a hotel close by. They did have negotiation, but it was with a supposed representative, and they were told that if the police arrested anybody, that the mayor himself would come down and occupy Phoenix with them. So they went back, told the group of people that they were going to be allowed to stay the night in the park, and then shortly after that, the police came in, swept in, and arrested 45 people. So they're not sure. There was some miscommunication. They're not sure if if they were being duped by the police or if the mayor decided not to occupy with the people.
Is there certainty that the person who assured them that the mayor was on their side was actually a representative of the mayor and not some guy from some right-wing group?
Yeah, there was some confusion. I'm not sure. I got this information on Twitter this morning, but there was some confusion between different people, and it very well could be.
It could have been James O'Keefe, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there was some really shady people at the Occupy downtown. There were some shady people. Seemed like Fox News was set up right by these guys that were kind of evangelistic, and they were very, very aggressive and trying to get people agitated. And of course, Fox News was set up right by them.
Right. So we have the classic infiltrators in the movement trying to discredit the movement.
Exactly. So, but I think people need to call the mayor here in Phoenix and find out if he actually, was involved with this negotiation or if he wasn't. Mm-hmm. And if he was, then he needs to be pressured to stand up to, what he said he would do.
Yeah. And let me just say, I mean, we're live on the air in Phoenix. If the mayor or anybody in his office would like to come on the program, we're here.
I wish he would.
In fact, we will also reach out to them and see if they have any interest. So we'll see how that plays.
We need more people to come down and help out. I have to say, I give it to the young people of this state, because they were very organized. We had there was a medical triage area set up. They had places with water. Everybody was giving out water. There was groups that were going around cleaning up after everyone, and it was very, very organized. And there was a lot of young people I was very pleased to see that.
That's marvelous. Rob, thank you very much for the report and for the details there, and we'll keep on this. We'll follow up on it. I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to KPHX there in Phoenix.
Thanks for everything you're doing.
You're welcome. And thanks for your thanks. Paul in Portland, Oregon, listening on AM 620 KPOJ. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Good Monday to you, Tom. Let's see. Occupy Portland, once again, absolutely great gathering of people downtown this weekend. Very, very big gathering, anti-war and Occupy Wall Street movements kind of joined together. There was a march that lasted for at least 2 hours. At points we were actually crossing streets and seeing the other end of the march going back up the other direction. I mean, it was just a great time. My 3.5-year-old daughter and my 13-year-old son participated. The police were perfect, told every one of them that I saw thank you, and told them all they all deserved a raise. The only odd part is how many Ron Paul supporters you see there at a rally for economic equality and social justice. I just think that's kind of funny.
Because the libertarians are not in favor of economic equality or social justice. Well, they're in favor of everybody being able to smoke pot and hire hookers, but
yes.
Beyond that, that's why I call them Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid, but
be honest about it.
Paul, thank you very much for the call and the update. Great to hear from you. Bob in Skokie, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Now, which one is it? That's all I'm asking.
Hello. Bob?
Yeah.
You are on the air, sir.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Just great. What's up?
First of all, I'm going to say something before I bring up the point I wanted to make. I was watching Meet the Press yesterday, and for all the credit that I'm hearing Gregory get today for what he did with Herman Cain, he never even brought up the fact that he wants to kill Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have destroyed the guy right in front of the national audience. It would have been the end.
Right, and that's not allowed. That's just not allowed on network television. You can't do that. They've got to keep the horse race going. They got to keep, you don't go after the obvious things that are going to destroy the candidates when you're at that level.
Agreed.
Tragically.
Okay, now let me tell you what I wanted to ask you or talk to you about. The end of last week, Michael Moore was on with Lawrence O'Donnell. And he made a point that I think was just so spot on. I wanted to ask you what you thought about the possibility of this getting any kind of support. And he talked about the fact that when he was growing up in Michigan, that there were millionaires who owned the factories, who had their little summer homes or their weekend cottages, who drove them every week. And everybody, said, hey, that's great. The guy, he's making a nice living, and he's giving everybody here a job.
Right.
And Moore said, now these people who might have been worth a couple of $1 million back in the 70s are insisting on being worth $4 or $5 billion
right.
here in this century. And he said, there has to be a point when you point out and say, this is not patriotic.
Yes.
To be that greedy that you have to, you know, put everybody under here in the United States in order to make some more money so you can become that much filthier rich than you already are.
Yeah. No, I didn't see the segment, and in fact, I didn't see either of the segment. I didn't see David Gregory either over the weekend, but so I'll just have to take your word for it. But I agree with that sentiment that there is a point of enough, and I think that to get there, what we need to do is roll back the Reagan tax cuts,
But can we make that point something that is catchy that people will, you know, salute?
Yeah, enough is enough.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Enough is enough. I mean, you know, and the really simple thing is roll back the Reagan tax cuts. And when you roll back the Reagan tax cuts, anybody making over about $2 million a year, that first $2 million a year, they're going to pay taxes on it just like, you know, a two-income family with good union jobs. But after $2 million a year, they're going to pay 74% taxes. And that's why CEOs back before Reagan dropped taxes from 74 to 28%, that's why CEOs made 30 times what the average worker does in the United States. And today they make 500 to 5,000 times. And, in fact, in Japan, the taxes are even higher. And you know what the average CEO in Japan makes relative to the lowest-paid worker in his company? 11 times. 11 to 1. And so, I mean, you know, that's social justice. That's income inequality. And the only really effective and efficient way to do it is to enforce it by tax policy.
You know, let me just give you one more suggestion. At some point in the next week or two, you ought to bring on somebody to talk about what's going on to the economy in the U.K. since about 1 year ago. They just basically stopped spending.
Oh, I've been talking about this repeatedly. Thank you, Bob. We don't need to bring anybody on. I mean, it's so obvious. This led to the UK Uncut movement. When David Cameron came in as the Conservative Prime Minister, he said, okay, we're gonna cut basic services. We're gonna cut the social safety net. We're gonna cut people on the dole. We're gonna cut unemployment benefits. We're gonna cut all these things, and they did. And guess what happened? Their economy stopped growing. In fact, they went even deeper into their recession. And I mean, initially they had a half of a percent, you know, drop in their GDP, and now they're up to like 0.2% growth. But that's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. So, anyhow, Rick in L.A., we got a minute to the break. Rick, it's all yours. Rick. Rick is not there. Okay. How about Sydney in Santa Rosa, California?
Hi. Hi there. I just was at the Santa Rosa, Occupy Santa Rosa rally, and I wanted to share a sign I really liked. A young girl was holding, and she had a Cookie Monster on it. It said 1% of the monsters has 99% of the cookies.
Ah, that's great. That's great. Sydney, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. That is marvelous. That's the iconic moment for the day. 45 minutes past the hour. By the way, the Tom Hartman Reader is now out in print, and we're going to be giving away a copy today. We'll give you details on the way back from this break. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The Tom Hartman Reader, I should add, is my most recent book. It's sort of a best of book, and I'll share with you what Leo DiCaprio had to say about it.
So then Occupy Wall Street. We are fighting for our lives. Occupy Wall Street.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're giving away my new book for the most interesting Facebook comment today. The new book is called The Tom Hartman Reader. It's sort of a best of my books. It has the heart of my ADD theory, concepts of older and younger culture, the root cause of our social environmental ills, politics. It's just out. Richard Trumka wrote for the back cover. With the ever-growing influence of corporate CEOs and their right-wing allies in all aspects of American life, Hartman's work is more relevant than ever. Throughout his career, Hartman has spoken compellingly about the value of people-centered democracy and challenges that ordinary Americans face today as a result of dogma dedicated to putting profit above all else. This collection is a rousing call for Americans to work together and put a people first again. And thanks to Richard Trumka for those kind words. President of the AFL-CIO, of course. Anyhow, back to the topic. We've been talking all hour about the Occupy fill-in-the-blank segments, getting reports from all over the country. And Colorado State Representative Wes McKinley is on the line. The Democrat from Walsh, his personal blog website is, or can be, his writings can be found at CO, as in Colorado, housedems.typepad.com. And there'll be a link to that at our homepage at tomhartman.com and in our newsletter tonight, where you get a link to every single story we cover throughout the day. Representative McKinley, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. Tell us what's going on with the Occupy Denver, Occupy Colorado, Occupy fill in the blank in your neck of the woods movement.
Well, I think the governor has kind of squelched that little movement right at the moment. But it's whether they talk about it coming back or not, it will always be there. The people's voice will always be heard if they will stand up and speak.
So what's the governor done to squish this?
Well, he threw them off of the park and lost it. You know, told them to leave and started arresting some of them. Now, they moved in about 3 weeks ago.
Right.
And I moved my teepee up there. I set my tent up there on Monday. I was in the office anyway. So I just moved in with that group, had a great time. Slept out there on the lawn in my teepee with them, and had a couple of guests that shared my teepee, get in out of the cold. And I was talking to the Highway Patrol. They come through quite frequently. Good guys, you know, just keeping the order and peace.
Yep.
And they said and I tried to get some porta-potties. That was one of my main concerns, was the environmental impact. As soon as I got there, I seen what was happening. I said, we need some porta-potties here. So I talked to the Highway Patrol guy, and he said they would pass it on up the chain of command. And then later on that day, one of the Highway Patrol guys there, and I said, what about my request for the porta-potties? Where are we going with that? Well, they're discussing that right now. The governor and the mayor was discussing that situation, the whole occupied situation. I said, why don't they come down here and discuss it? There's nothing wrong with coming out here and visiting with these people and discussing the situation. Well, they're doing. Well, they never did, of course. They never came down there. They talked about it behind the closed doors, but they never got out and listened to the people. There's some criticism about it was lack of organization, lack of goal. What do they want? They simply wanted their voice heard. We in America are a little bit upset about the fact we give taxpayer dollars and a few people benefit, and nobody gets anything, but a few people get a little more, and we get less.
Yeah.
That's the main message.
It's like this is that Howard Beale moment from the movie Network. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. Well, the people need to start speaking, and they did. Yeah. They did a very nice job, and I think it got a little out of control. There was other elements moved in, and they were supposedly going to self-police themselves. Well, society, no group does that. The governor should have been down there, and the mayor should have been down there from day one visiting with them, keeping it clean, keeping it sanitary, seeing what they want, letting their voice be heard.
Yeah.
They wanted to write a letter to the governor, and I said, it's a good idea. But I said, to write a letter to the governor is not going to do you a whole lot of good. How do you know where it goes or what it is? And I will try to broker the deal so that we can hand the letter to the governor or someone on his staff.
Right.
I said, you're not going to get to the governor, but maybe I can. So I went into the governor's office on Tuesday morning and talked to his deputy chief of staff, Kevin Patterson, real nice guy, and told him what we wanted, what they wanted. And I said, they want to read the letter to you and deliver it. And it's going to be a decent letter. It's nothing obscene or aggressive or anything, or I won't be a part of it. But it'll be a very nice letter, very normal. They said, okay, sure. So we made the deal between 1 and 1:30 on Wednesday. Then he would be there in the office, and this group could come up. And so on Wednesday, there's four, five, six of them. We went up, and the patrol guy, the security guy, Chief of Staff Jay, he came out and said he would take the letter. I know him. I said, no, Jay, we want to read this letter to someone on the governor's staff. Well, Kevin had been called away unexpectedly and couldn't be there. And I said, well, we'll just read it to you, and then it's all on film, too, that we're reading this letter. They were. And then you can give it to the governor. Well, he said, I'm strictly security. I can't be a part of anything like that. I said, well, get us somebody from the governor's office. We don't care. Just bring somebody up. There was no one in the governor's office.
Oh, man.
And I said, you know, Jay, I'm a little unhappy about this situation because, and I showed him the card. I said, here's the card, here's the notes, here's his handwritten cell phone on the back, and I haven't heard from Kevin.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to the office. These people come with me. They weren't too happy about it, but they did. They went up to my office, and I said, I called the cell phone number and said, Kevin, we had an appointment. I've got it in writing. I've learned when you're doing business with the governor's office, get it in writing.
Yeah, we have just 30 seconds left, sir, by the way.
And so, okay. So I called and said, I'll be down there in 30 minutes with that letter. And they said, okay. And then Kevin called me back in 30 minutes, and he said, I'm here, I'm ready. So we went down, and they read the letter and gave it to him.
Yeah.
That's simple.
But he still cleared the thing out. Is this the end of the Occupy Denver camping? You said earlier you didn't think this is the end of the movement.
No. I think that people want their voice heard, and they will keep on till their voice is heard. And their voice is being heard.
Yeah.
I was the only state legislator that would go down and talk to them. Everybody else was afraid to. And they're a little different than
sad.
What we see a lot. But that's part of our segment. You can't hide from part of your population.
Sure.
You can't accept, here's the part we want, here's the part we don't
especially
want.
The part of your population that's probably going to be people, you know, in your position that's going to be the government, you know, a half a generation from now or a generation from now. I mean, they're coming along.
Exactly.
Colorado State Representative Wes McKinley. He is the Democrat from Walsh, a participant in the Occupy Denver movement. You can find his writings at CO, as in Colorado, housedems.typepad.com. There'll be a link over at tomhartman.com if it's easier for you to remember that. Representative McKinley, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom.
An honor.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, that last interview with the state representative from Colorado who actually went down to Occupy Denver and pitched his teepee for several days and then tried to negotiate a rapprochement with the governor. And then the governor's office and the governor refused to meet with him. This is a state representative. I found that absolutely fascinating. And we got J.A. Meyerson reporting from Tacoma and Seattle at Occupy Seattle, Occupy Tacoma. Sarah Jaffe telling us about what happened in New York City over the weekend. Reporter with Alternet who was there at the Occupy Wall Street movements as they spread around. An awful lot going on. Right now, Joshua, I'm sorry, is it Connert?
Connert, yes, Tom.
Yeah, K-A-U-N-E-R-T. Joshua Connert, OccupyShy.org. The website Occupy Chicago, Occupy Chicago Research. You're a research student at Northwestern University. And if I have that right?
I'm actually an anthropology student, but I'm
okay.
I do research and press for Occupy Chi.
Okay. Okay, great. So tell me what's up. What's going on in Chicago?
I know that you're aware of the police crackdown that happened the other night.
I am, but many of our viewers or listeners may not be. So why don't you give us a quick recap?
Well, for the past few weeks, we've actually been occupying a small piece of sidewalk in front of the Federal Trade Building, and during that, we make our marches. We have a General Assembly in Grant Park every night, and also every day. And we decided in a General Assembly that we were going to occupy a piece of land in the park, in Grant Park. We set up tents. There was definitely a general consensus. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, we started noticing a very large police presence. And they basically came in and arrested about 175 people, cut up tents, destroyed property, all for us just expressing our constitutional right for peaceful protest.
Right. To peaceably assemble and petition for redress of grievances.
Absolutely.
The language from the First Amendment. And so where does it stand right now?
Well, as it stands right now, the General Assembly has decided that for the time being, until we can figure something else out, and because of the actions by the police, that we are going to just continue to stay in front of the Federal Reserve and the Board of Trade. Until we can secure a piece of land or a small place to occupy. I mean, there's miles of park in the Chicago area.
Sure.
And we just don't really understand why we're not being allowed to assemble.
Have there been, I'm assuming that there have been efforts to obtain permits and things like that?
You know, like I said, we have Mountain Park, and we're definitely determined to occupy a small portion of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to create a free, directly democratic space where we can have an ongoing discussion about how to fix the economic and social inequality in our system. And we just really ask for an end to the police interference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't work so well in 68, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So 175 people arrested. What's happened to the people who were arrested at Grant Park?
Apparently they were held overnight and released the next morning. I believe that they were cited for, it wasn't a misdemeanor, but they were cited for minor crimes. Like I guess it's similar to what a speeding ticket would be.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I know that there's been some people who have talked about a little bit of roughness and zip ties being pulled too tight. And, you know, so again, we don't understand what the justification is for these kind of actions by the Chicago Police Department. Right. When again, we are a peaceful, you know, directly democratic group.
Yeah. And you have a big D democratic mayor. So you said early in this conversation that Occupy Chicago is going to continue and that it is going to continue basically standing in front of the Federal Reserve and in front of the what was the other building?
The Board of Trade, Chicago Board of Trade.
The Chicago Board of Trade. And so basically that's where it stands, and you know, until something comes out of a place to go. How can people support OccupyShy.org?
They can definitely go to the website, occupyshy.org. We are accepting donations, monetary donations. We have a list up of things that we need, tents, sleeping bags, things to keep us warm. We're, you know, the winter's coming, and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, we ask that, and number one, we ask that people come out and support us. You know, we're talking about the 99% here. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody is affected. When we can get a gathering of thousands of people together and we can ask, these people, you know, are you happy with the way things are going? Are you happy with the fact that Wall Street's been bailed out? Are you happy with the fact that there's a huge unemployment rate and these corporations are making record profits? And right. When you see that not one person can raise their hand or raises their hand, then you know that they're feeling the same. I feel people, they're not indifferent. You know, people aren't complacent. I feel like they're disengaged. They don't know where to go.
Yeah. And this is the average person, not the person who's showing up at the Occupy Shy movements.
I'm sorry, the average person. Yes, well, I mean, yeah. We're all the average. I mean, again, we're all the 99%. So yeah. I don't want to differentiate between average or separate us from them. I think that we all need to come together, you know. And
but the fact of the matter is, there are a rather mind-boggling number of Americans who are not following politics, who really don't keep up on what's going on, who are, you know, into sports or music, and their idea of politics is looking at the political ads a week before the election in November.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, that's just another symptom of how broken the system is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, again, we'd like people to get engaged, and that's, you know, really what I feel these gatherings, the huge strength in it, is that we're offering people a place to have their voice heard. And they just have to come out.
And what are you learning from being in this movement?
I'm learning true hope. I'm learning that change really can happen. But it's, for me, I don't think it can happen in the current system. I think that we have to have a system where the people's voices aren't heard. When Citizens United, you know, when corporations can dump as much money as they want.
Yeah.
And you know, I just, again, it's hope. It's hopeful for me. You know, I have a family, I have children, and I would like to see them grow up and have a good world to live in.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it does happen, and it does happen from the ground up. And, you know, I've seen it in my lifetime. There was a time when 18-year-olds couldn't vote, but as the song went, you know, we're on the eve of destruction. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. And
right.
In 7 months, we got a constitutional amendment passed that lowered the voting age to 18. 7 months. I mean, it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
And I think that Citizens United should, you know, has provoked enough rage, frankly, right across the board. I mean, there's even Tea Partiers who are upset about it, that
Absolutely.
We should be able to get a constitutional amendment passed that says two very simple things. Corporations aren't people and money isn't speech. And put an end to this madness, right? Put an end to this nonsense.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. You know, I mean, again, it's appalling that there's so much wealth concentrated in such a small group of people, and that wealth is not, I'm not even talking about spreading the wealth around, but the wealth is not even being used for the benefit of the people.
Yeah.
You know, again, we're, you know, I have a hard time putting food on the table, and again, 99% of the people in the country have the same problem.
Yep.
We're working as hard as we can. We have two jobs. You know, we're not how this, you know, some of the media is portraying us is, you know, ignorant and stupid and hippies and some of these things. You know, we are the American people.
Yes, absolutely. And the American people are, and frankly, I think it's happening all over the world where so-called neoliberalism or the Chicago School or the Milton Friedman style or whatever you want to call it, conservative economics, Reaganomics, Thatcheronomics, IMF-onomics has taken hold. All around the world where that's taken hold, people are standing up and saying, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yes, and they are all over the world. They are.
Yeah, yep. They literally are. Joshua, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And OccupyShy.org, of course, the website. Much appreciated. We'll talk to you soon.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, a person who's been hanging out with Occupy DC, who is also a near and dear friend. We'll be right back.
How can such a thing be fair? Won't you please come to Chicago for the help that we can bring?
There you go. OccupyShy.org is that website. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Jim in Huntington Beach, California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I was impressed with your restraint on the Bill Maher show regarding the Big Mouth conservative John Fund.
Well, I've debated John before on this program, but, you know, the Bill Maher show, I think that they're trying not to become crossfire, you know, so I didn't want to be the obnoxious, you know, but I said my piece and he said his piece. And so I think, you know, we
okay,
all
well, I wonder why Bill Maher invites two of them, you know, because basically they just push their dogma, you know, and by raising their voice,
you know, I
over
you'd have
else.
To you'd have to Jim, you'd have to ask him, but I can tell you the, you know, if he's a relatively progressive guy, I'm a progressive, so it was kind of two on two, and I think that raises the opportunity for discussion, for rational discussion, which highlights the issues, and I think that that's a healthy thing all around. It's one of the reasons why I have conservatives on here on this program frequently to debate. I think that it highlights things. Jacob Dean is with us. He's our associate producer and, of course, lives here in Washington, D.C. with us. And hey, Jacob.
Hey, Tom.
And, Jacob, you've been hanging out down in McPherson Square.
Yeah, I went down, actually was there on the very first day, October 1st, at Occupy D.C. at McPherson Square, and made a trip back this weekend, yesterday, for a few hours to check things out and get an update for us.
Yeah, and this is OccupyDC.org, and we are residents, immigrants, students, parents, activists, professionals, unemployed workers, and voters who comprise the underrepresented 99%. So what did you see when you first went there, and what did you see this weekend?
On the first day, it was just a couple of groups of people, probably a few half dozen groups, standing around at different sections of McPherson Square and chatting and kind of getting a sense of why everybody else was there and just talking amongst each other.
That was weeks ago now.
Yeah. It's been 3-4 weeks since then. And yesterday, a complete 180 degrees from that, the park is filled with tents. There's barely any room left if you're heading down there with a tent. Not much room left, and it was great. It's just this grassroots community that's been built over this last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's spectacular. And, of course, McPherson Square is by 15th and K Street for anybody who you know, needs directions or doesn't know, or, you know, anybody in the D.C. area who might be listening. The General Assembly meetings are every day at 6, and people can participate, OccupyDC.org. And your takeaway from you know, your thoughts on...
I love the fact that a grassroots community can come together. Everyone was supporting each other there. It was fantastic to see. Very respectful, very clean. There were volunteers going around the park cleaning up, after each other and just everyone being able to come together. No police, no violence, very, you know, respectful and cooperative. And, Like I said, it was completely full of tents. People showing up, getting out there and getting active. It's great to see.
Yeah. Okay, great. Jacob, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
For the report. Great to have you in the studio every day and in the streets every weekend. It's Jacob Dean, our associate producer and board operator and all-around good guy. So a lot going on, and a lot going on there in particular, and all around the country. Ferguson in Glen Allen, Virginia. Hey, Ferguson, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Fine.
What I wanted to suggest is there's a way to get corporate money out of campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a people's movement, because you know anybody who is in politics, they're not going to kill the goose that lays the golden egg.
Yeah.
It does not require any constitutional amendment, does not require any action on the part of politicians. But since the people are motivated now against Wall Street, I think they would be willing to do this.
Yeah, and
the precedent has already been set. Foreigners cannot contribute to campaigns here in the United States. Why not take it down to the state level and say people who live out of the state cannot make contributions to anybody running for governor, lieutenant governor, and so forth.
Right. Every state in the union had laws similar to this back before the 1890s and 1900s, early 1900s. And in 1907, a federal law was passed to that effect. It's called the Tillman Act. It's still in the books. It's been modified over and over and over again, most recently by McCain-Feingold. The problem is the Supreme Court says no. You've got five men who think that they are the kings of America.
The people initiated.
Oh, I know. We need to. No, I'm totally with you, Ferguson. We need to have a constitutional amendment that says corporations aren't people and money isn't speech. Period. End of discussion. That's what it needs to be. Repeat that mantra. Corporations aren't people. Money is not speech. Ben in Houston, Texas. What's going on with Occupy Houston?
Wanted to pass on a sign that I saw this weekend that pretty much sums up a lot that I hear you talking about. One of the signs was, I will believe corporations or people when Texas executes one.
Right.
Immediately I thought about you.
Yeah.
And another one that I had to take a picture of. It was great. This guy, it says, Perry, don't think I need no education. He gonna be president. Several of the letters are backwards.
Sure.
Need is spelled NEAD.
Right.
No is spelled KNOW, and it's edumacation. Perry don't think I need no edumacation. He's gonna be president.
And the tragedy is Texas has some of the worst schools in the country. I mean, that's the tragedy of it.
Oh, absolutely. And part of the reason I was down there, the Occupy Houston organized rather quickly, just probably 3 days. The park that they are occupying, also the city gave a permit for Energy Day. So a bunch of the big oil companies were present.
Oh, that should have been
interesting. Given their spin.
Ben, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate the update.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with more Occupy. It's happening all over the world. And what Thomas Paine had to say about it. So. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk media for the rest of us. And, boy, Occupy the Planet is what's happening right now. I mean, it really is quite remarkable. In Rome, unfortunately, the demonstrations there turned violent. But, Saturday was the kind of international day of solidarity with the Occupy Wall Street movement. And people turned out all over the planet. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. And, you know, somehow the banksters and the IMF and the government folks are like, it's a bunch of hippies. No, I'm sorry. It's like trying to stop water coming down a hillside. You can't stop it. This is this is that moment. And it's not just this little short moment. You could argue, we actually had in the previous hour, I think it was J.A. Meyerson made the comment, the writer for Alternate, who was reporting from Occupy Seattle and Occupy Tacoma, that the movement really got started in 1998, 1999 with the anti-WTO meeting in Seattle. And then it got interrupted by 9/11. I would and now it's back. And I would say, yeah, that's very possible. You could even say the movement got started with the Ross Perot, you know, taking 20% of the presidential vote on a populist platform. But I personally, I think the real moment that this movement got started was in 2008 with the election of President Obama. And what has come out of that is two populist groups, one on the right and one on the left, the Tea Parties and the Occupy movement, who are both basically saying, hey, we're the rest of the people and we want things fixed. Now, they may have different ways to do that or different diagnoses and, you know, whatnot. But, you know, it just this is that moment. And I think that over the next two or three years, we are going to see a fundamentally different America. In a very positive way, frankly. I think it's, you know, we're going to go through some tough times between now and the election, particularly since the Republicans have said that they're going to stop and block anything that provides jobs for people. They've tried to kill off 7 million jobs. They've succeeded in killing off at least 600,000 government jobs in those states where you have Republican governors. You got Rick Scott down in Florida saying, no, I'm not going to take any federal money for high-speed rail or anything else. That would make jobs. We got 10-point-something unemployment here in Florida. That's going to make people really PO'd at the president, and they won't vote for him in 2012. So we're going to keep the pain on. That's the Republican strategy. Those, by the way, are my words, not his, based on his actions. So, anyway, you know, thoughts on the day. Whew, amazing, everything that's going on. Ben, in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Ben, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? I have a couple questions. I'm wondering, you know, I'm seeing all this, and, you know, when the Arab Spring happened overseas, you know, it was all over Time, and it was all over CNN, it was all over every news station, and now when it's here, it's completely blacked out. You know, how can we ensure change, and how can we make sure that they're not just going to keep blacking this whole movement out?
You know, Gandhi's famous saying, you know, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, then you win. And, I think that the ignore you part has passed. And now they're, and Ben, thanks for the call. Now they're to the then we ridicule you stage, at least the corporate media, the mainstream media. And you know, those of us out there who are calling it out are growing. And the Internet, I mean, it's just a fire with this thing. And so it's making its way. And then they fight you, and we're seeing now, you know, for example, we had the state representative from Denver who was like, you know, hey, I pitched my teepee down there with those people. State representative, elected member of the House of Representatives. And the police came in and said, that's it, clear it out. He's trying to talk to the governor. This is the then they fight you. And if you remain peaceful, then you win. And it I'm serious. It's all about holding that high moral ground. Keith in New York City. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Well, I'm Keith from New York. I'm really a member of the middle class who is so supportive of this movement. This movement, these kids make me proud, I have to say. I was in Times Square on Saturday. I stayed off somewhat to the side, and as a lot of these kids came out of the barricades to go to the bathroom or to get something to eat or something, talk to them. These kids are savvy. They're college educated, most of them. You know, my son is 11 years old. If he grows up to be anything like any of these kids, I will be proud. These kids have really impressed me. People need to, if you're around New York or the New York City area, go down to Sagatti Park, because it's like, you know, Liberty Square there is in the shadows of the World Trade Center. You don't understand that until you see it.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, such a poetic metaphor, and I do believe history has its poetic metaphors that tell us, you know,
the stone has been dropped and things are, the ripples are starting to happen, and that those ripples started to happen down there first means that I think poetically we are taking our country back in so many ways.
I absolutely agree.
So inspiring. The sad thing though is, and one of the things I want to say to my fellow New Yorkers is, please, when you look at the New York Post, the Daily News, those tabloids, they are still like doing, you know, the sensationalist line. They're painting these kids as anarchists. These kids are far from anarchists. You know, Dr. King was having his memorial dedicated the next day. And I will tell you, Martin Luther King was looking down Saturday with a smile on his face from heaven. I mean, he was thrilled.
And I'm totally with you, Keith.
I'm choking up a little as I say this.
Because he was, as much as he was about racial justice, he was about social justice. He understood that we have a racism problem in this country. We also have a classism problem in this country. And Reaganomics, you know, I mean, this happened after him. But Reaganomics has made it so, so much worse. Keith, I got to move along. But thank you for the call. So well said. Steve in Marysville, California. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was just calling to let you know that Occupy Sacramento is going strong. I was down there on Saturday, and about 200 people showed up and marched to the Capitol and back and past a couple banks and everything. But there's been a diehard group of about 60 to 70 people that have been out there since Thursday a couple weeks ago. So far, there's been 30 arrests because they have an ordinance at the park, which is named Cesar Chavez Park.
Right.
And there's no overnight camping. So they're allowing the tents to stay up, but the people have to sleep on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Right outside the park.
Yeah, very interesting.
But can't be inside the park.
Yeah, and this is part of the, you know, let's make it difficult, let's make it uncomfortable. But, you know, frankly, like I said, I think it's like trying to stop water from rolling down a hill. Thank you, Steve. It's just, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. Candace in Salem, West Virginia. Hey, Candace, what's up?
Hey, Tom. It was great seeing you on the Bill Maher Show. And
thank
also,
you.
I saw something on with Mrs. Goodwin. That they had, they were arresting people that were taking money out of their accounts. And this was happening at Citibank. And they
and Bank of America. Bank of America actually is the one that, where they actually arrested Bank of America customers for criminal trespass on the property of Bank of America simply because they were there and they wanted to take their money out.
Yeah, and they dragged the one woman, inside so they could, don't ask me why.
Right.
I guess that happened yesterday because they showed it this morning on Democracy Now, and they dragged her literally inside screaming so they could arrest her. And, you know, well-dressed woman, I mean, hello. So what does this mean? If I want to go through it or anybody wants to withdraw money, we're going to get arrested. I think we should be arresting the banksters, but I'll just let it go at that and listen to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
and my understanding, and this is, you know, time will tell, but my understanding is that there are going to be some arrests of banksters coming down the road, that the Justice Department has been looking into this, that, and the other thing, and I'll just leave it at that. We'll see where it comes, where it goes. Diane in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Diane, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I called last week, but I didn't have my information. I didn't have it verified, but Amy Goodman this morning and said that there was a break in the AP where they have some proof that David Koch, well, the Koch brothers, I guess, are the main thrust behind the campaign of Herman Cain.
Yes, there's a lengthy piece about this that you can find at thinkprogress.org, where they've been reporting on this for about a week and a half, or maybe actually a little longer than that, about how Herman Cain has been the favorite of the Koch brothers. He's been to their retreats. He's been funded by them in a whole variety of things and ways. And even if he's, and he's, in fact, I think they described him as their stalking horse. And even if he does not become president, which I think is pretty unlikely, but you just never know when you got some, you know, people worth $50 billion behind you.
That's the scary part.
Yeah. Even if he doesn't become president, he will have delivered the Koch brother message over and over and over again in the media. And
that's why I was calling you to I was almost sure that you would be aware of it, but please keep it in the forefront as much as you possibly can.
Okay, we'll do it. Thank you very much, Diane. Good to hear from you. And Jacob, is that music supposed to be there or not supposed to be there? Not supposed to be there. Okay, so we're taking a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, the Talk Radio News Service. We'll check in with them and more of your calls. Stick around.
By now, we should know how to communicate. Instead of coming to blows, we're on a roll. And there ain't no stopping us now. We're burning under control.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. And Ellen, so what's going on? I understand you've got, first of all, some Supreme Court news.
Yes, I do. The court's going to review an appellate case. This is interesting. The lower court found that Royal Dutch Shell, this is going to get you going, was not liable under the Alien Tort Statute for human rights abuses in Nigeria. Now, local people said that that Royal Dutch Shell was involved in crimes against humanity.
Is this the Ken Ciro? Ciro? I can't remember his last name, but the guy who got hung by the government.
Well,
like a
I think it's related
ago.
To that. Yes, okay. But I don't know if that's. I haven't seen the exact case. But anyhow, the lower court said, this is a Tom line if I've ever seen one, that the law may not be used against corporations.
You're kidding.
You couldn't wait to see your face.
This is American court?
This is an American lower court.
The law cannot be used against
corporations. So the Supreme Court decided to hear this case, and as you know, four justices have to pass on it
to hear it. Right. So, well, that's very interesting.
Okay. It's also going to review the Stolen Valor Act. That's when, somebody can say that they particularly have a medal when they really don't. The Ninth Circuit Court, that's the one out in California, on a 2-1 decision said that it's not constitutional. The law is not constitutional. It was doing nobody any harm if somebody says that they were a...
Well, it's the equivalent of, there are certain circumstances under which you can't lie,
right.
Like if you're under oath. But basically, the First Amendment grants us all the right to lie.
That's right.
And, the right to say
anything. And a lot of people do.
Please. Yeah, and certainly, hey, how do these glasses look on me?
Right.
Or whatever.
Exactly.
People. And so, yeah. So.
So the government, because the government is charged with arguing for a case, they're going to say the law is reasonable.
Right.
Oneida Nation. Had several pieces of land taken away from it.
This is the Native American community.
Yeah, in New York.
In New York.
250,000 acres in all taken away from them. By the U.S. government in the 18th and 19th century.
Oh,
They sued and said that they want their money. It would be worth about $500 million in today's dollars.
Whoa.
And the appellate court threw out the claims, and the Supreme Court is not taking the case.
Wow.
So the United Nations got really hit up hard.
That's, yeah. Well, on the other, I that's a horrible thing. And had that been granted, every other Native American community in the country would be saying, okay, here it is. And frankly, I think that they're all entitled to it. I mean, they got their land taken. There was a genocide that happened here. But I can understand where the courts...
And we all play Indians at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't agree with this court decision, but I can understand. In the most Machiavellian sense, I can understand it. I don't sympathize with it. Anyway.
Okay, so the president is on his bus tour, and the White House did a little briefing on it. Also, there was a thing this morning. They basically, Jay Carney, the press secretary, said that they expect the Senate to take up the first part of the president's plan, which is the $35 billion for teachers, fire, and police department. Basically, the White House is saying, hey, guys, you want to turn that down and go to the American public and say we're not going to put teachers back in the classroom, that's up to me. interesting, our friends at American Crossroads, Karl Rove and Company, I say that with a jest in my voice, they are running ads along the bus tour, $80,000 so far that we know of that they put for these ads. The ads started yesterday. They're going to run through Wednesday. And they have Bill Clinton. They have a clip of Bill Clinton saying that he opposes a new tax increase from olden days, not current.
Sure. So Karl Rove is trying to basically booby trap anywhere Obama shows up. Did you see this Pew study that Obama's getting terrible press coverage compared to the Republicans? Just right across the board, so much for the liberal bias.
Yeah, I did see that Pew study.
It's amazing.
And the president basically is saying we can't afford to put cops on the beat because we're not asking millionaires to pay more. He said there's no plans from the Republicans that would create early job creation. I mean, that's
right.
Nothing is new on that front.
He's not saying we can't. He's saying we can't, but he's not saying we shouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the president, clearly the White House is doing an all-out push. They have both the Transportation Department secretary and the Interior Department putting in some new things to bring jobs. Secretary Ray LaHood, who, by the way, was a Republican, he said that they are going to use some of their federal funds to put 300 public transportation projects in urban and suburban areas and trying to build more transit facilities. And so they're going to be doing that.
You know what he said on this program last Friday?
What?
Former Republican Congressman Ray LaHood said that the reason why the Republicans are opposing any of these programs is because they want to damage President Obama's chances for
re-election. Of course. But he said it.
And he's a former Republican member of Congress.
Pretty astounding.
Yeah. Pardon my interrupting.
The Interior is now saying what they're going to do. This is actually great news for those of us that like to do these kinds of things. They're going to try and put a lot more jobs and get more people into the Interior Department, national parks, building up national parks, working on multiple recreation kinds of things. And they expect that eventually could create, through the downswing of, you know, once you create a job, then there's another job because somebody's buying candy or whatever, 3.3 million jobs. So the White House is sort of saying, okay, we're not even going to wait for that. We're going to take our departments and we're going to start to do what we know creates jobs.
That's great.
So, yeah, that's really, really good news. The other thing is you know, there's a lot of discussion right now, Tom, about this Lord's Resistance Army and the 100 troops that we're planning on sending into Uganda and other parts of Central Africa, including South Sudan. South Sudan and the Central African Republic and Democratic Republic of Congo are saying that they're going to welcome it. But I just got to tell you, they're putting in 100 U.S. advisors. Can you imagine even putting 100 U.S. advisors in South Sudan? I don't know how it's going to make a big difference.
This is like putting 100 people into an area that's the size of Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi combined.
Where there's half the time there's no electricity. I do not know how they're going to pull it off. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, 100 people is not a whole lot of people.
Yeah, okay. And Ellen, we got to wrap it up. Thank you. Thank you very much for the report.
I always have too much material.
Which is wonderful. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. We'll be right back. Tom Hayden is coming up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. Former California State Senator, contributing writer for The Nation magazine, author of 19 books, most recently The Long 60s, and one of the authors of the Port Huron Statement, which kicked off the Students for a Democratic Society back in the day. Tom Hayden is with us. TomHayden.com, HAYDEN.com, his website, of course. Tom, welcome back to the program. His Skype just croaked. Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Tom, you there?
I am.
Okay.
Let's go.
Great. Okay. And I just introduced you. Before we get to this thing about what's going on in Iraq, we're seeing 900 cities around the world having, you know, this International Day of Occupy, right? This has grown from Wall Street. You and I had a conversation, I don't know, 6 months, a year ago or something about, you know, why aren't the young people in the streets? And kind of came to the conclusion that there's no draft, there's not that much pain. But now we've got 30% unemployment among youth, and many of these kids have student loans that are crushing them. Isn't that the new draft?
It's a good question. Tom, we were discussing why the young people were not out in the streets against the wars.
Right.
As to this, it always happens unexpectedly. It's predictable. There's very little organizational hand behind it. So, yes, overall, it's a huge, spontaneous, worldwide cry of protest against the absence of an economic future. Where it goes, who knows?
Yeah. And you know, we've both seen a whole variety of cycles and spinoffs from these things.
Exactly.
It's going to be very interesting to follow this. You're reporting that the Associated Press is reporting, or the AP is reporting, and this is kind of now dropped into the rabbit hole. The administration isn't commenting on it, and it's like the media just went silent on this. But I thought this was a really big deal that by the end of this year, Obama is going to do what?
According to the Associated Press report, which I have no reason to doubt, the president is going to withdraw the last 48,000 American troops from Iraq. That's a saving of about $50 billion a year, and that's that. For the past couple of years, there's been a lot of anxiety about this, and a lot of argument about whether the United States was going to leave a residual force behind. It's not. Repeat, it's not. A lot of people, I think, are startled by this in the anti-war movement, perhaps because you become jaded after 10 years or you don't believe whatever the government says. I don't know the reason. It's perfectly explainable to me. It was Obama's intention, and the Iraqis themselves are divided about it. They just can't make up their minds, and the Pentagon has wanted immunity for any remaining American troops, and they're not going to get immunity. So all the troops are going to be out. That's a tribute to the 10 years of the anti-war movement. We need to protect that outcome, and it's a tribute to all those in Iraq who want self-determination and have opposed the occupation. There may be wiggle room at the end of the year. There may be Americans in large numbers at the embassy. There may be continuous discussions about a training force. But all that is a public relations cover for the fact that the government we installed at the force of the Pentagon is unable to ask us to stay, even on a token level. So I think it's over, but I agree with you. It's quite puzzling that the New York Times and the mainstream media refuses to call it. They're just not prepared to call it. Well, and a lot of people at my blog site don't believe it either. I'm seeing a credibility gap out there among the peace activists.
Uh-huh.
They just don't believe it.
Yeah. It seems that the first of all, this was one of President Obama's campaign promises, so he'll be keeping that. That's going to help him with his reelection in 2012, assuming that Iraq doesn't completely disintegrate when we leave. And secondly, this is something that Bush had set up in 2008 as this was the date. And so it's, you know, everything has been moving in that direction anyway. And third, it's going to save money, which is, you know, something that is in short supply right now, given that the Republicans, you know, won't raise taxes, blah, 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 and on rich people anyway. But so it seems like, you know, there's a positive political equation here. But also, you know, this Pew study came out yesterday showing that on a 4-to-1 ratio, the Republicans are getting favorable coverage in the press and the president is getting unfavorable coverage in the press. And I wonder if that might have something to do with it. This is a good story for him. So therefore, let's ignore it.
I'm not that cynical, but I don't know the reason. I think it's more that the mainstream media, the New York Times, considers itself in part attached to the national security establishment.
Right, the old Judith Miller syndrome.
No, I don't mean the most extreme elements, but just generally, they have a hard time wrapping their journalistic mind around the idea that the superpower could be forced to leave a country entirely. It's not entire, but it's pretty close to 100%. And so they're going slow on covering the story, but the story is the story. I followed it very closely the past year. Of course, I'm in favor of all the troops getting out, but I've been predicting that they were going to have a token 3,000 or 4,000 remaining as kind of a fig leaf. That was recommended by Leon Panetta. But the Iraqi parliament is tied up, is unable to pass a law giving immunity to any American troops staying behind. And so that's the excuse or pretext or explanation. And the Pentagon will not leave troops there who might wind up in an Iraqi courtroom if they violate Iraqi laws. So I think what's going to happen, if you want to be cynical, and I'm not cynical, I think this is an historic achievement. They're going to move the American troops that would have stayed in Iraq over into Kuwait in case some situation arises where they have to come back in.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen either, but that's the predictable redeployment of forces that I see.
Tom, in the minute we have left, there are some who are suggesting that the next big battle is going to be in the Middle East, and it's going to be simply Shia Sunni. And you've got Shia Iran now, you know, opening banks and being very active in what was Sunni-controlled Iraq, but is Shia-majority Iraq. And that, you know, in many ways, the Bush administration blew it by taking out Saddam Hussein, who was kind of stabilizing that region. And now it's Saudi Arabia versus Iran. Quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's beyond the capacity of most people to even begin to understand. But the United States supported Saddam Hussein in his war against Iran. We forget that. Nobody over there forgets it.
Right.
Secondly, the United States displaced a Sunni regime from Iraq and put in a majority Shia regime. Everybody knows that. That regime in Iraq is close to Iran, and the minority group there, the Sunni, are aligned with the Saudis.
Right.
So the Saudis have been lobbying us to stay in Iraq, and it looks like the pro-Iranian forces have won the outcome.
Yeah, so George Bush just handed it to Iran. It's amazing.
Tom,
Tom Hayden, TomHayden.com. Thanks, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Always a fellow with some extraordinary insights and words of wisdom, and a longtime peace activist, Tom Hayden. Great guy and one of my heroes. Twenty minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Elizabeth in Summertown, Tennessee. Elizabeth, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Well, just two things. Looked up the Move Your Money, Where to Take My Money, and the little bank where I have my money is one of the places where you ought to put your money in Summertown.
Yep.
At the volunteer bank there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I'm on my way up to Occupy Nashville. And it's been going on since October the 6th, people mm-hmm. sleeping over in Legislative Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And the police are, law enforcement is definitely there to protect and serve. We're not getting any hassle. We're getting support. They understand that the 99% they are part of.
Yep.
And they also appreciate our peacefulness.
That's great. That's great. Elizabeth, thank you for the report, and good luck. Let us know, you know, when you get there, when you check it out. Give us a call back and let us know how things are going, okay?
Yeah, well, I've been to several of the congresses, and it's very organized. We definitely are working to be supportive of non
partisan and free speech, and that corporations are not people and money is not speech.
There you go.
I really like that one.
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite mantra. Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Corporations are not people and money is not speech, and we need to say it over and over and over again. Carol in Alameda, California. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Occupy Oakland is a week old. I'm a 55-year-old mom of three young adults, and I was down there 3 days this week. Our whole family went to the rally on Saturday, marched from Laney College to Frank Ogawa Plaza next to City Hall, where the encampment is set up. There were about 2,500 people, I would say. CBS News even reported that.
Wow.
Danny Glover gave a very inspirational speech. The mayor of Oakland spoke.
Wow.
They need tents. They really need tents. I was down there yesterday. They also have a children's village. Not many people know that, but there's a lot of families at Occupy Oakland. There's at least 10 small children living there overnight. And so they could use healthy snacks, and they definitely need tents.
Okay, great.
This is in great contrast, however, to what's going on in San Francisco. Have you heard about what went on there yesterday and last night?
Yes, we've had two people call in and give us reports on that.
Good. Very excited. It's spreading all over the Bay Area, even small little suburbs here. We have Occupy Alameda, Occupy San Leandro.
Yep.
It's happening everywhere.
It's over 900 cities around the world right now.
Yep.
And it's happening. The people of the world are waking up to the corruption of the system and the banksters. And and it's not just in this country. It's happening all over. Carol, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Fred in Center Hall, Pennsylvania. Hey, Fred, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to talk to you about the event that I attended Saturday in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Which is about 5,500 people. Smack dab in the middle of Pennsylvania, and you know what Pennsylvania is like. It's Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Alabama in between.
I've been there.
About 300 people showed up. More than half the crowd was over 50.
That's interesting.
Maybe a quarter of the crowd, I would say, was college age from Bucknell University.
Right. But that over 50, I mean, that's the same demographic as the Tea Partiers.
How about that?
Yeah.
And there were a lot of Republicans there.
Yep.
Including the former executive director of the Industrial Development Corporation and the former executive director of the County Planning Commission.
Wow.
And the thing that impressed me the most was that there were no personal attacks. They were attacking the problem.
Right.
You know, and the mantra was used throughout.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And well,
it was... two 10-year-olds, or under 10-year-olds, one was probably 8, spoke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their thing was very, very simple. The rich people shouldn't have all the money.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Here in the United States, roll back the Reagan tax cuts. In the UK, roll back the Thatcher tax cuts. Why is it that this isn't affecting Sweden? Well, because they never did that. You know, they never engaged in that so-called neoliberal or trickle down or supply side or any of that kind of nonsense. And you're not seeing Occupy Stockholm, although there may be people actually in Stockholm who are protesting corporate power worldwide and maybe even in Sweden. But I find it amazing that, you know, we used to think that 30-1 with the pay ratio of the top CEO to the lowest janitor was normal in the United States. In Japan today, and it has been this way for decades, it's 11-1. I mean, in Germany, it's 11-1. In Japan, it's 10-1. In Germany, it's 11-1. And so it's a matter of just simple fairness. But that fairness has to be enforced by tax policy, and that's done legislatively. Fred, thank you for the call. Very well said. David in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom, getting back to your previous guest and, you know, the military pullout of Iraq. But, you know, I was waiting for the question of what about the private contractors?
There's apparently going to be 5,000 private contractors who are going to be hired not by us but by the Iraqi government over a short term to provide security to the members of the Iraqi government who feel that they need, you know, armored Humvees and former SEALs to protect them. And then, you know, that's between them and Iraq. That's basically a contract between Blackwater and Iraq.
Okay, and what about the huge embassy we built there? I mean,
we're gonna
why
keep,
isn't
there
that,
will be
why,
a,
why isn't
there,
that being
there will
an
be
issue?
There will be 176 U.S. soldiers to defend the embassy. They will live in the embassy. It is the largest embassy in the world. It's George Bush's monument to himself. And I'm guessing over time it's going to become progressively smaller and smaller. And but we'll see. We'll see. But those are the numbers as have been reported. And I think that, you know, they're pretty solid. David, thank you for the call. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. Just a reminder, we're going to give away at the end of the show today, another 20 minutes, 25 minutes or so, a copy of my new book that is out. It's the Tom Hartman Reader. Just came out, just available now. Blurbed by Leo DiCaprio, Van Jones, and others.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
In fact, Van Jones said, never one to shy away from the truth. Tom Hartman's works are inspiring, wise, and compelling. Kind of nice. Yep, that's the good, the bad, and the very, very anisognathously ugly, which, by the way, means having different teeth on the top and the bottom. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, a supplement for the brain. The good, the California Medical Association. Despite the fact that the federal government is cracking down on medical marijuana dispensaries in California, the state's largest group of doctors has just adopted a new resolution to support the legalization of marijuana for medicinal purposes. According to the physician's resolution, quote, it is an open question whether cannabis is useful or not. That question can only be answered once it is legalized and more research is done. Then and only then can we know what it is useful for, end quote. You know, if politicians really don't like the idea of a government stepping between a patient and their doctor, they should listen to the California Medical Association and get out of the way of stopping medical marijuana legalization. Or frankly, for that matter, all marijuana legalization. The bad. Eric Cantor. Even though Cantor has changed his tune on Occupy Wall Street, moving from calling it a dangerous mob to now saying he sympathizes with them, it's clear that Cantor still doesn't get it. In an interview yesterday with Fox So-Called News, Cantor said the best way to address the concerns of the Occupy movement is give more money to the rich. We know in this country there is a complaint on the folks on the top end of the income scale that they make too much and folks on the bottom end don't make enough, Cantor said. We need to encourage those in the top income scale to create more jobs. We are about income mobility, and that's what we should be focused on to take care of the income disparity. End of quote. Right. Give these so-called job creators even more money to go out and hire? Or go out and stash cash in their Swiss bank accounts, either way. Following Cantor's logic, we should really also rely on defense contractors to end wars, right? And oil barons to stop oil pollution? And Republicans to address poverty? And the very, very ugly Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Herman Cain drew some criticism over the weekend when he suggested that the best way to take care of illegal immigration was to put up an electric fence, on the border and kill people who are trying to come across. Cain later walked it back, saying he was joking. But Sheriff Joe Arpaio isn't joking. Apparently, he thinks a deadly electric fence is a great idea. Arpaio told CNN this morning, I'm sure he was joking, but it probably means that he's taking it serious to do something at the border and stop the illegal immigrants. Joking about killing illegal immigrants means Cain is taking the immigration problem seriously? I'm sure if Cain would have joked about nuking Mexico, Arpaio would have fallen heads over heels for him. And that's very, very ugly. Amazing. 866-987-THOM. Our telephone number, not a single asterisk here. William in Portland. Hey, William, what's up? William? Okay.
Good to hear. Yeah.
Okay. Michelle in Los Angeles. Hey, Michelle, what's up?
Hi. So my question for all of the Occupy encampments that are like around city halls, since Occupy Wall Street is about occupying the financial center, why not like Occupy LA should be Occupy Beverly Hills, say?
Well, that's just where the rich people live. That's not where the finance centers are. I think those are in downtown LA, are they not?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not.
Oh, okay.
Beverly Hills.
Yeah, I've never lived in Los Angeles. I've spent a lot of time there, but so you're saying that the bank headquarters are actually in Beverly Hills as well as the wealthy people who own the stock?
Well, the bank headquarters are not in Beverly Hills, but that's the biggest, that's where a lot of the money comes in. That's the biggest,
Right, but what are you going to do? Occupy Burberry or whatever, however it's pronounced, or Gucci's or something like that? I mean, that's...
Occupy the Wells Fargo or the Big Bay, the branches that are right there in Beverly Hills.
Oh, okay. All right.
Just my two cents.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate the call. Forgive my lack of knowledge of all geography. David in Sacramento. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, maybe Little Woodstocks without the music or something. I'm Occupy Sacramento. I was there this weekend, and it was exciting. The guy who talked about it earlier, I don't know where he was. There was maybe almost 1,000 people there, and certainly that many in the march. And it was, we were pumped and we were moving.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to figure out where we go from here. And I'm forced to be kind of a weekend warrior. I think I'm going to be there next weekend.
Sure. I think where we go from here is we keep saying, here we are, and something has to be done. And it's the job of the legislators to do something, and it's the job of the people to demand that something be done. And I don't think that it's the job of the people to specifically demand. I mean, they can. Certainly we can. We can make specific demands. But the system is not fair. The system is benefiting the 1%. The 99% are getting screwed. Really, the 90% are getting screwed. And, go ahead.
What I was thinking of was a kind of an old 60s style teach-in, where we used to all sit down. Everybody gets 2 minutes. Everybody kind of gets to speak their piece. Then we have a big board on the front and say, okay, this is the issue we want to put up. We kind of say, okay, there's number one. And then you go down number two, and you kind of involve everybody in the process.
Well, to a large extent, that's what's happening with these general assemblies.
Yeah, right. It didn't seem to be happening where I was.
Yeah.
It wasn't a group feeling. There wasn't a feeling like we're all. In fact, the socialists gave a talk, and I kind of spoke. I mean, they listen. It's his turn. He gave 5 minutes on Stalin and the history of socialism, and I think we're kind of. I was trying to say, are we talking about something different?
Everybody's gonna try and hop in and say, hey, this is gonna be my 5 minutes of fame, or this is gonna be my opportunity to push my own particular agenda. That's fine. That's A, human nature, and B, small d, democracy at work. I mean, that's the fact that people are showing up in large numbers.
Yeah.
I don't think that we need to have a Glenn Beck standing out there in front of the group telling them how to think. In fact, I think it might be a bad thing. And coming up with a 10-point plan and saying, here it is, or Martin Luther's, let's nail this on the church door. I think that the way it's being done right now is admirable, and I really respect it. David, thank you very much for the call and the report from Sacramento. Fascinating. Tilly in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Tilly, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I called you before. And my husband and I were yesterday with all the kids down there in Phoenix, Arizona, across by the Capitol. Not the Capitol, the main county building. But one of the things that we learned, and it happened to us too, and that's why we were protesting, is that, and I don't know if it's come up a lot before, but a lot of these kids had 529 education funds, either by their parents or their grandparents. In our case, example, my grandson, when he was born 1992, he's going to be 16. Whatever money he had in there, to this day, he has lost three times every time the market went down a lot considerably. And this is the third time it's going down again. He only has, for 16 years, $1,000 to show profit on what is original principal. Now, talking with some of those students, a lot of them have lost their principal.
Yeah, yeah. So there, so what they're looking at is their savings have been wiped out. A lot of them are $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 in debt with student debts, and they can't get a job. No, you're absolutely right, Tilly. Tilly, thanks for the call and thanks for sharing that story. That is a good one. Anthony in Chicago. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Interesting enough, I'm trying to join this conservative union club at my college, Northeastern Illinois University. And they've got this flyer that says, oh, you know, read the readings of Ayn Rand, and at the same time, oh, tout the Constitution. You gotta know the Constitution. What I don't understand is the bottom line of Ayn Rand's movement, which turned into egoism, is individualism, but at the first lines of the Constitution say, we the people establish a better union, and it upsets me that they don't understand at heart their argument. Do you have any more to add to that?
No, you're absolutely right, and the Ayn Rand movement is the libertarian movement, frankly, is at its core. I mean, you look at Ayn Rand, her hero, the man that she used as the model for the heroes in several of her novels, was a fellow by the name of Wayne Edward Hickman, who kidnapped a 12-year-old girl from a wealthy fellow, cut her body up into little pieces, ransomed her back to her dad, sewed her eyes open, and put her in the backseat of his car so that dad would think that she was still alive. When dad handed him the money, he ran off and kicked the body pieces out onto the street. Dad's standing there sobbing as the police are driving up, and then Hickman is, you know, sent to be executed. Ayn Rand writes these long things about how this man is the super. She literally called him the Superman. He stands above society. He does not honor the rules of society. Ayn Rand was a sociopath. And her objectivism and the libertarianism that has grown out of it is sociopathic. And that's why the Koch brothers love it. That's why they're promoting it. That's why they funded and founded and helped found the Cato Institute that promotes it. And the people who think that, oh, you know, this is their mantra. Taxes are violence because the tax man ultimately has the power of law. Well, then red lights are violence because, you know, police can stop you for red lights. There's this thing called society that we're all part of. And, well, anyhow, enough of the rant. Anthony, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be giving away a copy of my new book, The Tom Hartman Reader, right after this.
From the war against disorder.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Yace Luna is the winner of, winner's the wrong word, is going to get a copy of my book, The Tom Hartman Reader, for posting on our Facebook page at Tom_Hartman on Facebook. Violence against nonviolent protesters just proves the justice of their cause and makes Occupy stronger. And Yanis Luna, if I'm mispronouncing, my apologies, but thank you for that post, and good on you. And I'll get an autographed copy of the Tom Hartman Reader, which is probably not even yet in stores. It'll probably be the next couple of days, but it's just, I know Amazon is now shipping it and some of the other online sources, so we'll get one out to you right away. Much appreciated. Mark in Los Angeles. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Well, first, great job on Bill Maher the other night. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Great to see you. Yeah. Want to see you out there more. You're one of the great voices.
Well, it was an honor to be there. I'll be on Dylan Radigan's show tomorrow, by the way, on MSNBC.
Fantastic. Well, now more things for my DVR. Perfect. you know, I wanted to talk about the woman who called a little while ago about Occupy Los Angeles and saying we should go to Beverly Hills. I'm in Los Angeles, and I think they're in the exact right place. And for a couple
meaning
of reasons,
downtown LA.
Meaning in downtown L.A., yes, yeah. Downtown L.A. in front of City Hall is exactly where all the Occupy movements, every City Hall is where all the Occupy movements should be. This isn't this really should be, and I don't believe it is, a let's eat the rich kind of thing. It's right. That it, there's nothing wrong with success. This is America, the land of if you, you know, work hard and make it and do all those things, that's wonderful. The problem we have here is the moneyed interests have taken over and infiltrated the government process by using their money, by essentially buying a Supreme Court friendly to their cause and giving all of the rise to all of this unbelievable corporate and money into the system that literally buys the system and takes away the democracy of that we've worked 230 something years to create. And
you're right.
That's the problem.
You're right. And that's you know, I've had people call in, for example, there was a period of time, this has been maybe 4 years now, where Walmart actually bought some ads on our show, and people called up. Actually, it was when I was doing a local long story. Anyway, people called up and go, "What? There's a Walmart ad on your show?" And I'm like, you know, first of all, I'm pleased to take their money. But second, you know, they're funding Progressive Talk Radio. Hey, you know, who would have thought? But secondly, they didn't do it very long, by the way. And secondly, it's not Walmart that's the problem. It's the laws that are the problem. We used to have trade policies. You know, back when we had trade policies that protected American manufacturers, when Walmart first started out and Sam Walton, when he was building that empire, I remember when Louise and I were living down in Atlanta, this was in the 1980s, and the first Walmart opened outside of Atlanta, and the big banner across the front was Made in America is what it said. You know, Walmart, right. Made in America. And pretty much everything they sold was made in America. That all changed, not just when Sam died, but when the rules changed, when NAFTA, GATT, you know, NAFTA, SHAFTA, all these right. trade deals went through in some of them in the 80s, most of them in the 90s. And you're absolutely right. If we want to make change, the change has to be at the level of changing the rules. What has happened is like you got two baseball teams that are competing against each other, and one team has paid off the umpires to let them have five strikes and only let the other team have two strikes. And right. and we're yelling at the baseball team that has the five strikes, and we should be going to the umpires and say, why are you taking this money from these people? And we're going to make that illegal, and the playing field needs to be leveled. You know, if it's a very, very imperfect metaphor, but I'm spot on with you, Mark.
Yeah, no, you make perfect sense. And I'll just even go one little inch further. It's not even just the umpires. We already have rules of the game. The umpires aren't enforcing them.
You're right.
You know, we have the Sherman Antitrust Act has been on the books.
Ever since 1881.
Have, you know, here we go.
Yeah, and
you know, just you want to fix it.
Yeah. Yep. And the Tillman Act has been on the books since 1907. Although the Supreme Court did overturn it in large part with the Citizens United. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And the Buy America Act has been on the books since 1933. I keep saying 35, apparently it's 33. And we do just need to start getting on board with these things. Mark, thanks for the call. Wesley in Johnson City, Texas. Hey, Wesley, what's up?
Hi, how are you doing? I appreciate your show so much. I've enjoyed it, and I'm glad that we have access to some of the truth that's going on in the country to wake people up and to what's happening today.
Thank you. Wesley, we just have a minute left in the show here. It's all yours, but what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'd just like to speak real quick on these 30-year mortgages. People need to become aware of the interest rate, the way it's set up for principals and interest, and think twice before you get into a home with a 30-year note. I mean, the bank has it set up for their favor. And
right. The bank is basically making almost 100% profit for the first decade. And the reason that they love these 30-year mortgages is because the average, before the Great Bush crash, the average American bought or sold their house every 7 years, moved every 7 years. And so if you've got 30-year notes, you're constantly paying interest and you're never really paying principal. So if you can get a 20-year note or a 15-year note or something like that, or just pay an extra $100 a month on your mortgage or an extra whatever it may be, you know, and add an extra 10% in or an extra 20% in and dedicate that to the principal, and you'll pay down the mortgage much faster and it won't be so profitable to the banks. The banks don't like this at all. Another way that you can do it is to pay and set up a payment schedule where you pay every 2 weeks rather than every month. And that'll pay off your mortgage faster too. But your interesting point, you know, I don't want to turn this into a consumer advice show, but you're right. Anyhow, coming up tomorrow, more on Occupy Wall Street. And would you let your daughter play lingerie football? What? I'll talk with writer and former teacher Megan Rosker. Plus, we'll challenge Phil Kirpin of Americans for Prosperity about the race for 2012 and his new book, Democracy Denied. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.